Shalom and welcome to Tehillim Yomi. Today we learn Mizmor Mem Hei, Psalm 45. This psalm is unusual, as it does not discuss the relationship between man and God, nor about God himself. Rather, it apparently describes a wedding day and the qualities of the king and the bride. Amos Chacham and others suggest it refers to the wedding day of a king and a non-Israelite bride, perhaps David, Solomon, or Achav. Then he, in the footnotes, explains why each one of those has reasons to accept and reasons to reject. The psalm was crafted as a song for the wedding day in the temple, as an ode to the festivities, and does not include a dimension of God. It does include a dimension of God, his chosen one, his throne, and the like. Verse 1, Lamanatech al Shoshanim Livnei Korach Maskil, Shir Yididot, to the chief musician, according to Shoshanim, a maskil for the sons of Korach, a song of loves. It's remarkable how many inexplicable words are used in titles of psalms. Psalm 45 is no exception. Yididot, we've encountered in Psalm 39 in the form of Lidutun. Now, some use the root word Yidid as a song of love, like Rashi, Rashbam, and Mitzudat Zion. But Radak suggests it refers to the Messiah, who is loved by God. Tur Sinai, a Ukrainian-born Jewish philologist who emigrated to Israel and was part of the creation of modern Hebrew, suggested that Yididot is related to Yididya, another name for King Shlomo, and that the psalm was written on the wedding day of Shlomo. As for the word Shoshanim, that's a wider debate. Rashi interprets it metaphorically as referring to students who flourish like roses. Rashbam considers it as a name of a musical instrument. Chacham said it could refer to an instrument, a song, or flowers themselves, which were brought to the king. So once again, we can choose what makes most sense to us in the title of the psalm. The psalm can be split into two: praises of the king and his attributes, 2 to 8, and the wedding itself, and praise for the bride, 9 to 17, with a concluding verse, 18, at the end. Verse 2 says, Rachash libi davar tov omer ani ma'asai lamelech l'shoni eit sofer mahir. He really gives an introduction saying, my heart overflows that I will address my verses to the king. Yaf yafita mibnei adam hutzakhein b'siftotecha alkein b'rachacha Elohim le'olam. This has become a very popular Jewish song. Yaf yafita, you are the fairest of the son of men. Loving kindness is poured into your lips, therefore God has blessed you forever. Chagor charbecha al yarech gibor hotcha v'hadarecha v'hadarecha tzlach rechev al dvar emet v'anava tzedek v'torah torcha noraot yuminecha chitzecha shnunim amin tachtecha yiblu lev oyvei hamelech ki zacha Elohim olam lad shevet mishor shevet malchutecha. Gird your sword upon your thigh with your glory and your majesty ride prosperously in the cause of truth for the sake of righteousness, and let your right hand teach you awesome things. Your arrows are sharp, the people fall under you, they sink into the heart of the enemies of the king. Your throne, O God, is yours, is like the throne of God forever and ever. The scepter of your kingdom is a scepter of equity. You love righteousness and hate wickedness. Therefore, God, your God, has anointed you with the oil of gladness above your companions. All your garments are fragrant with myrrh and aloes and cassia. From ivory, palaces, stringed instruments make you glad. As I mentioned, the praise of the Israelite king is replete with divine attributes or association. Verse 3 says he is more beautiful than all other men, loving kindness on your lips, and therefore God blesses you forever. Verses 4, 5, and 6 describe other attributes such as valor, splendor, honesty, humility, spreading fear amongst enemies. And then again, verse 7 frames it in divine measures. Your throne is like the throne of God, your scepter one of equity. Verse 8 follows suit. You love justice, hate evil, therefore God has anointed you. The anointing oil brings joy and salvation. The qualities of the king resemble many of the qualities normally attributed to God, which makes sense since the anointed one is a reflection of God's characteristics. Section 2 transitions from the king to the bride. Benot melachim bikrotecha nitzva shegal liminecha beket mofir. Daughters of king are among your ladies of honor. At your right hand stands the queen in gold of Ophir. Shimivat uri vahati oznech v'shikhi amech uveit avich. Listen, O daughter, and consider and incline your ear. Forget your own people and your father's house. V'itav ha-melech yafyech ki hu adonech adonayich v'yishtachavulo. Uvat tzor b'mincha panayich yichalu ashirei am. The king shall desire your beauty, be bowed down to him because he is your lord. And O daughter of Tzor, Tyre, the rich among the people shall entreat your favor with a gift. And this is the reason they think it's a non-Jewish bride. Kol kvuda bat melech pnima mimishbetot zahav levusha. We'll talk more about this verse, which says, the daughter of the king, her splendor, her glory is within. Her clothing is of embroidered gold. Lirkamot tuval lamelech betulot acharei hareotem uval ot lach tuvalna besimcha besmachot vegil tovona behelach behechal melech tachal botecha yu banechash tishitem ulasarim b'chol haaretz. She shall be brought to the king in embroidered garments. The virgins, her companions, who follow her, shall be brought to you. With gladness and rejoicing shall be brought. Shall they be brought, they shall enter into the king's palace. Instead of your father shall be your children, whom you shall make princes over all of earth. As opposed to the varied qualities of the king, the bride is described as beautiful, just in many different ways. The king will desire her beauty. Her beauty is glorious within, clothing embroidered in gold. There are no other great qualities mentioned about this woman. She's passive, being brought to the palace, to the king, with her maidens, who will have wonderful children, and the king who will become prince, and with the king, and they will become princes in the land. Hidden in this verse, in this psalm, is a verse which has been the source of Jewish women's or strict versions of Jewish modesty for millennia. The verse 14, which states that the splendor of the daughter of the king lies within, does not necessarily reveal a hyper-strict responsibility to cover oneself at all times. Nevertheless, the Midrash extrapolates that the rabbis have heralded this verse time and again in support of the highest echelons of quote-unquote modesty for a Jewish woman. Kol kvuda bat melech pnima. The Midrash Yalkut Shimoni, in trying to find a common theme between the first half, which focuses on inward beauty, and the second, which speaks of her clothing made of embroidered gold, states the following. Kol mitzna tatzma zachta mishpatzot zahav levusha. Anyone who hides themselves becomes worthy of the embroidered gold and clothing. So the second half of the pasuk is a reward. Amar Rav Levi zachta shetamid mena lovshei bigdei kuhna gedola. She receives the reward that her children will wear this embroidered gold, which is the clothing of the high priest. Doesn't really make it into a wide range law about women's modesty, because it's only referring to now to someone who's from the priestly family. Nevertheless, it's a midrash, and the midrash quotes a famous story of Shiva Banim Hayula Kimchit. There's a woman named Kimchit who was obviously a priestess or a family of priests. The Kulam Shem Shiva Kohuna Gedola, all her children were Kohanim Gedolim. So Amrula Chachamim, Ma Maasim Tovim Yish B'yadcha, why do you deserve this? Amra Lahem Ha'avoda Me'olam La'ru Korot Beti Sarot Rashi. The walls of my home never saw my hair. Karu alea pasuk ze kol kvuda bat melech pnima. This is the pasuk which is associated with this. To this, Rambam wrote in the 12th century, it's an embarrassment for the woman to be always going outside the home. The husband must prevent her from doing this, allowing her only once or twice a month. For the beauty of a woman is only for her corner of the house. As it says, splendor of the woman is internal. Throughout intellectual history, various rabbis have employed this term to add to the severity of the modesty laws, though some rabbis push back. In any event, there's a clear contrast in the depiction of the characteristics of men and women in ancient times. The psalm concludes with one unrelated verse of prayer and supplication. 18. Azkira shimcha b'chol dor v'dor, al kein amim yehodcha le'olam v'ed. I will make your name to be remembered in generations. Therefore, the peoples shall praise you forever and ever. Chacham questions the proper way to interpret this psalm. He brings rabbinic commentaries who suggest that this is really a metaphor. Actually, the whole psalm is about praising Israel, or praising Abraham, or about those who learn Torah. Others claim it was about the soul yearning for God. There are so many readings of this psalm off the text that Rav Kahana in the Gemara was shocked that anyone would read the literal meaning of the psalm, to which Mar, the son of Rav Huna, responded, "Ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto." The Torah should not be taken out of its literal meaning.